Welcome to Becoming Heisenberg. It's Entertainment Talks podcast for Breaking Bad on AMC and Netflix. I'm your host, Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is David. How's it going?
I'm doing all right, thanks.
Cool. This is for season 4, episode 9, The Gus Terminator. No, it's called The Bug, this episode. we'll talk about that brilliance, of course, here in a bit. Season 4, episode 9, Bug. What did you think of this episode?
I like this. It's got not an entirely sort of Breaking Bad cold open, but it is one of those sort of flash forward ones where you go, oh, what's happening here? It's, you know, you could sort of tell what it was, but it's like, I'm not sure what this connects to. That's interesting. So that was quite nice. And I honestly couldn't remember what this connected to at all. I have very little memory of this episode going back into it, but I mean, there are some fantastic moments in this. I mean, Gus being a badass, that fight, which is just wonderful. Really feel like you're sort of getting into the meat of the season, I think, at this point. It very much feels like that. There's lots of stuff to talk about. You've got, oh, you're Skyler at the car wash as well. Also, and her old job coming back to haunt her as well. So, yeah, there's lots of really excellent stuff in this episode.
Yeah, certainly. It's a fantastic episode. Lots of different, I wouldn't say a range of emotions, but a range of different things happening. And of course, just the bit at the end. You've got, like, again, Gus being Terminator and stuff is just really, really cool. You've got, weird cold opens with sort of, because some of them, are either like current time, flash forwards, I guess, or flashbacks. Was the term flash forward developed from, because the first time I remember hearing the term flash forward in a TV show was when Lost did it the first time.
I think that's where I remember it from.
I've known flashbacks as a thing to be in TV before that. I suppose that was part of, not to get into Lost, but I suppose that was part of that twist, which was, okay, you have these people on the island, then the flashbacks to find out their life before, because Yellow Jackets kind of does a similar thing, and then you have the flash forwards, which is sort of revealing certain stuff. That was cool in the show as well. Just again, it's about the context, the mystery, the sort of, okay, you've got a thing in front of you which is telling you something, but you don't really know what it's related to, was great. Particularly, again, I mean, there's lots of different excellent types of cold opens that Breaking Bad does. Again, obviously, infamously, the teddy bear ones, and ones like that. But because the show is so full of, like, you know, great directing and particularly great camera work, when you do one like this, where there's no dialogue, you have no idea what's going on, you can't even hear anybody speaking, add something a bit different. Because you've got ones like that, and then you've got ones like, remember from a few episodes ago when Walt is sort of frantically driving through traffic, and you've got kind of, I suppose the difference there is, okay, he's communicating to somebody, he's in a panic, but okay, you can guess as to why, but why is it actually happening? Whereas this is just a couple of shots of things, which is great. More stuff with Hank. It's very, just interesting from, I guess, Walt's point of view of, why is it that this person I'm related to has to be really really annoyingly connected very directly to this thing that he's doing? So I suppose the difference there is kind of, unlike a Tuco or a Crazier or, you know, somebody like that, you can just kill them. Whereas, you know, again, we'll have to wait and see what happens to these characters, but that's a lesser likely option, I suppose. That's a less, like, if he looked at that as a realistic option, then, you know, it's a different thing. But especially the way Hank is kind of talking to him and stuff about, like, oh, why don't you, you know, kind of come along on that, and Walt, you could tell this thing from Walt of, like, I really wish you would just get out of the way. which is not going to. Lots and lots of great stuff to break down, scene at the end and all kinds of stuff. So anyway, we do have a little bit of news to get into now. You was mentioning in terms of Vince Gilligan doing interviews, of course Pluribus is coming out this Thursday/Friday. So just a little shout out for that. Of course, it'll be directed, written by Vince Gilligan. It's basically from Vince Gilligan. It's going to star Rhea Seehorn, who you won't see in this show, but she was a character in Better Call Saul, played Kim. She was phenomenal in the role. Yeah. And it's going
to
be...
It's not connected at all to the Breaking Bad stuff.
Yeah,
she's a different character in that, but yes.
Yeah, but it'll be very much worth watching. Yeah, we'll talk about that, I suppose, at a later point. Anyway, Vince Gilligan was obviously has been around talking and doing interviews and stuff. Been a little bit of time since we've seen him kind of doing this, I guess, because it's taken a bit of time for Pluribus to come together. Anyway, says here, Vince Gilligan was asked if he would ever make another project in the Breaking Bad universe. That's why I'm talking about this here. And he says, quote, never say never. I'm not tired of it. I'm not worn out on it. But I am ready for a hero instead of a villain. And then the next quote is, I live in fear of messing up people's memories. I'd rather disappoint folks by not giving them any more Breaking Bad than have, say, okay, man, that was a really great multi-course deal, meal. But that last serving in the dessert bowl was dog shit. Now I've got a bad taste in my mouth, and that's all I'll remember now. I don't really want to do that, he said here. Totally get what he means. I mean, again, you look at Better Call Saul, you look at Breaking Bad, and you look at El Camino, and you go, okay, people love this, can you make more of it? Which is sometimes a mistake to do. But I suppose for him that's a case of, okay, you know, for the most part, most people that watched all three things really loved all three things. And if you go and make a fourth one and it's like not as great, or again, it wouldn't be a sophomore slump because we've gone well past the sophomore slump, but a kind of that could be annoying with certain things where it's like, oh, wow, season one was really great. Shame about that second season. It doesn't have that like sort of follow up. And this would be a sort of further out version of that. Because we've talked before about, okay, if you did like a Hank DEA show, if you did obviously like a Gus prequel, Rise to Power kind of thing, if you did, obviously there's been jokes about like Hank and the Minerals and stuff, and like other little ideas as well. But yeah, so that gives me a little hint as to maybe he's brainstormed a couple of things. I'm sure he's brainstormed some ideas and thought about some stuff. But again, if you're going to go back to that well, which is such a rich well of content, and you do put something else out and it's just not as great, like you said at the start, I live in fear of messing up people's memories. Curious, of course, he's got, I think it's Apple have greenlit 2 seasons of Pluribus, so he's going to be working on that for a while anyway. I totally get what Vince means here about this kind of thing. And you know, you have done 3 projects in Breaking Bad. It's not like you've kind of left potential on the table, I suppose. Anyway, what do you think of what Vince is kind of talking about here with Breaking Bad?
Yeah, I absolutely get his trepidation of maybe stepping back into this world, because it's like he got away with it by, you know, you got the main show, you then did El Camino, which, you know, follows one particular character and sort of rounds off that story. You've also got Better Call Saul, which obviously is the backstory to Saul. And it's sort of, do you risk trying to do that again? You know, do you do a Gus backstory? Is there enough there for you to do that? But you've also got the problem of you can't have the same actor do it. You know, I mean, I guess you could, but you need to spend a lot on de-aging stuff for that, which I think is going to up the cost quite a lot. I mean, there is a way of doing it, I guess, but it's tricky because you would have to probably recast that role to have a younger Gus,
which
in there.
To me would take and some of that magic away, I suppose.
Yeah, takes some of the magic away, and you've got that issue of... you've then got some poor actor that's like going to have to live up to Giancarlo Esposito's performance, which I wouldn't wish on anybody. So it's a tricky one, I think, that. And then it is sort of, well, okay, what else you can do? I mean, you know, a Hank DEA show feels a bit like a stretch as a sort of tag on, because it's not really that integrated into the main story, because it's not about the rise of the sort of meth empire or anything kind of directly involved in that. I suppose Better Call Saul kind of wasn't, but I don't know. I think he got away with it once. I can see why he might be cautious about doing more. And, you know, what you don't want is you don't want something which ends up being a final season of Game of Thrones that completely tarnishes the rest of his franchise. So I could see why, you know, I mean I trust that the only reason he would do it is if he had a good idea for it and something that he was absolutely 100% confident that would land. You know, he's not going to do it just because somebody throws a bag of money at him. So I trusted him for it, but if he decides he wants to leave the universe alone and he doesn't think there's a good enough story for it, I'm perfectly fine with that. So, you know, we'll wait and see. At the moment, I'm just looking forward to seeing what he does with Pluribus. So.
Yeah, for the least two seasons, that will be on for. So, at least we'll get some of his work again, which will be looking forward to that, like I said. Cool. So, yeah, like we said, we'll see if he revisits the well at some point, if he has a particular idea. Of course, if he goes on Reddit, there's a bunch of ideas, but, you know, it's more about what's going to work and that sort of thing. But yeah, that's the news on that part. It's kind of weird doing like news on a rewatch podcast, but it is related to the show. So, you know, that's why I thought I'd bring it up. Cool. All right, that's what we got for the pre-talk and bits like that. Let's get into some housekeeping and then get into the recap after. See you for that in a minute. Hi there. If you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link, which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system, which is usually in the bottom right hand corner, to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. Alright, recently on Entertainment Talk, yesterday did another Gaming Talk podcast. We talked about Saints Row's future. The design director was asked to pitch an idea for a sequel to the original game, because of course Saints Row doesn't really have like canon or whatever, and there was discussions on the reboot, which was a couple of years ago, which really didn't work well at all for lots of different reasons. We also talked, kind of linked to that, about Grand Theft Auto, Dan Houser, who I believe is one of the former writers and people at Rockstar, of course the people that make those games. He was talking about Agent, which was like a cancelled spy game from Rockstar, which never saw the light of day. And he also talked about why GTA wouldn't work in London, and one of the reasons he said is because we're not quite as he didn't say this directly, I'm not quoting him, but we're not quite as gung-ho as America is, so it wouldn't work.
Well, yes, distinct lack of guns. Although, weirdly, there was a GTA sort of game that was set in London, and for the life of me, I can't remember what it was called. But,
yeah, he talked about that as well. Yeah, Yeah.
Yeah, there was one. It was quite fun. But yeah, there is a distinct lack of guns over here compared to our American cousins.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So we talked all about that and talked about kind of, okay, if Saints Row came back, how would it compete with GTA or what would that look like and that sort of thing. So we talked all about that. We talked about more Nintendo shenanigans as well, because people were pirating their games and streaming them and doing all kinds of stuff with that. I also talked about some Ready or Not Day One Edition thoughts, and also talked about Chicken Run Extraction, which is a new game that's come out in the Chicken Run world. Robert talked about a few different games as well, and of course a bunch of other stuff on the podcast as well. I didn't make a new United cast for Saturday when we came back because, of course, 3 o'clock shenanigans and all that sort of stuff. Not going to explain that here, but we did draw 2-2 with Nottingham Forest. We play against Tottenham away on Saturday, who beat us four times last season. We play against Tottenham on Saturday lunchtime away. The next five or six games are actually on TV, so that's good and useful. That's overall what's happening on the United cast. Of course, there was the other gaming talk from last week. We talked about Halo going to PlayStation, the Crash Bandicoot rumored Netflix series. We talked about infected characters. That was on the other gaming talk. Recently on the United cast, we did beat Brighton by 4-2. Almost slipped up, but sort of saved things at the end, so that was good. Did another TV season review. This was for a must-see review for Invasion Season 3. So not strong must-see, just a must-see review for Invasion Season 3. Hasn't been renewed yet for Season 4. I haven't heard anything like about that, but does end in a decent spot if that's where it's gonna finish up. So that was good. Over on the Diabolical 7, of course, we had the end of Gen V Season 2, although that will feed into the fifth and final season of The Boys. Gen V is not being renewed for Season 3 yet, but again, like I just said, they set that up clearly for The Boys Season 5, which I believe is in June. So that's going to conclude there. So that's Gen V at the moment, and that's pretty much what we've been doing recently on Entertainment Talk .org and on podcast platforms. Let's get into the recap. We already talked about it a little bit, but we see some blood dripping, blood on a shoe, some heavy breathing. They like doing the heavy breathing in these some of these cold opens, and I think we saw some glasses as well. What's that noise?
Somebody's letting off fireworks.
Ah, okay.
Sorry about that. You're gonna hear fireworks. Yeah. We're recording this on the 5th, so.
Yeah, it's Guy Fawkes Day or something. You might hear some on my side at some point as well. So,
yes.
We see all that kind of going on. Rather than asking you kind of what you thought of the scene, because we didn't really know what it was about at the time, I didn't personally kind of remember what this was for. It's nice that we do get the answer, I guess, by the end of the episode. It was cool to see. But it is still kind of nice when we do watch these episodes and don't remember like where things are going to go or where things are from, because that makes things a bit kind of fresh. I couldn't personally remember like what this was from or what the context of it was. How about you?
No, I couldn't remember at all. I did wonder whether it was a flash forward to, because there is another quite violent scene that I do very much remember, and I couldn't remember whether it was maybe from that, but did the next scene you see the shoes, it goes from that, so you know it's Walt that's in that opening scene. So I thought, oh well, it's not that then. But I couldn't quite remember, okay, well, what I couldn't remember why this was here and what had actually happened. So no, I was, that was rather nice. I kind of got that surprise later on as well to to what this was.
Certainly. So that was the cold open. Hank retrieves the GPS tracker from Gus Fring's car. Disappointed that it recorded nothing suspicious, he investigates Gus's distribution center. Walt warns Mike about this. Walter also sees Tyrus outside Hank's house and reports him to the police, forcing Tyrus to leave. All he sees is like, what was it? Work home, work home, work home. There was about eight of them or something on the... And you can tell this kind of, he's like flicking with the arrow keys or whatever he's using, like next one, and he's just like, there's nothing here. Gus was, of course, completely aware of that it was there, so obviously he's planted this on there on purpose to kind of, I guess, throw him off, confuse him. I think it probably does a bit of both. Because yeah, Hank was expecting, well, anything more or anything different than that, I suppose, than just work home, because, you know, you can't then go to your DEA boss or whatever and go, hey, yeah, he's gone home and he's gone back, because that will lead you nowhere, I suppose. Yeah, this is kind of mixed in with a couple of scenes where, yeah, because first of all, it's he gets Walt over there, doesn't he? And then Walt sort of like, again, continues to try to shrug him off in a certain way. Then there's the whole thing with Tyrus, and then there's the part later where Hank finds this distribution center, and then Walt pretends to be, you know, very ill and all that sort of thing. So lots of interesting kind of mixed in scenes here. I didn't remember this Tyrus thing at all. In fact, I don't really remember until he came up recently, because he was sort of Victor's replacement, isn't he, after the box cutter episode. I don't really remember, which is interesting, because a couple of episodes I said I remember what happens to every character, but he kind of slipped my mind, I suppose. But yeah, can't remember sort of what happens to him. But yeah, one of the more kind of quiet, I mean, I guess Victor kind of was as well, one of the more sort of quiet side sort of henchmen. But yeah, obviously what makes this whole thing so kind of interesting is, like, obviously Walt can't explain what's going on. Walt can't really, there's nothing really Walt could say to make him go, oh no, you got to stop looking after, you know, looking for Gus. And yeah, there's nothing he could really say. And very unfortunately, I mean, it's been technically been a problem from the start, but this is the first time it's kind of more directly got in the way, because it was sort of, again, Jesse and Walt were on their own. Jesse was the business, he was the meth. That was always the kind of deal from the start, right? And while it was kind of, okay, my brother is a DEA agent, he might get in the way, he wasn't directly in the way at the start, but now, like, this whole full-on thing with Gus, and you can just tell with Walt, it's sort of, like, again, unless things change later on, like, I can't really just kill you right now, because you're my brother-in-law, you're not, like, a Tuco or somebody that's more, you know, disposable. But he has to just, yeah, very, very awkward for him. I wonder if Walt kind of, because as confident as, like, you know, Heisenberg can be, and as confident as, you know, confident Walt could be, I suppose, we have seen him slip up and make some mistakes and do some, you know, things like that. I kind of do wonder from his perspective, when it's like, right, I'm going to get into the meth business because my brother-in-law has essentially showed me how much money I can get from this, and I'm going to need money for the whole plan and all that sort of thing. If he thought this kind of thing was going to happen, but then on the other hand, in terms of, like, Walt's plans for how all this was going to go, you've also got the fact that he's trying to, like, really shove this Ryzen thing onto to Jesse. So there's, like, a kind of lack of planning from him there as well. Because you can, in this episode, start to see some of Walt's cracks appearing. From, like, I guess planning and sort of what he's doing next and how he's managing things. But yeah, Hank is unfortunately now much more in his way, I suppose. What do you think of these scenes?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think Walt ever thought that Hank would really be an issue, because the plan at the beginning was never to be producing meth on the industrial scale that they are producing it. He just,
right, yeah,
that's where he ended up. So he kind of thought he could fly under the radar. And then, of course, you know, it's Walt's obsession that puts him on that radar, because he is obsessed with creating the sort of perfect meth. And it ends up being this blue color, and that makes it incredibly distinctive. So, you know, he does sort of end up putting himself on there. Plus the fact that he then gets involved with Gus, and it's suddenly everywhere, and they're producing it on this mass scale. So I think there's all that in there. And it's sort of interesting that Gus actually himself hasn't been as clever as he thinks, because the route just goes from, you know, his house back to the chicken shop, back to the house, back to the, and that in itself is suspicious to Hank, because there are other chicken shop locations which he owns. And he's not gone to any of them. He's not even detoured to go and pick up groceries or anything. You know, I mean, if I had been like Gus, or go to a restaurant, or you know, or the cinema. Yeah, yeah. You know, he's literally done nothing but go, you know. So that in and of itself is somewhat suspicious. So, you know, his radar is still, Hank's radar is still up on that, despite Gus sort of trying to throw him off, but actually not doing a great job of it. Because if I saw that, I would be a little suspicious as well. Because, you know, you pop by the shops on the way home. You know, you go and think, oh, I need to pick something up, or you go to a friend's house, or, you know, and there's absolutely nothing on that, which is a bit weird in itself. So, yeah, the whole sort of tracker thing. I mean, I see what Gus was doing, but yeah, it's suspicious. Mm. And the sort of the Walt getting rid of Tyrus as well, where he didn't really need to get rid of Tyrus. There wasn't any reason to do that. He was just kind of being
annoyed by his presence, I suppose.
Yeah, he was just sort of annoyed that he was being watched. And it's a great scene in the way that he does it. He pulls up alongside, rolls down the window, and does it right in front of Tyrus, knowing that Tyrus is going to have to move because he's heard that, you know, the police are going to come die. So, yeah, I mean, it is kind of a dick thing to do, because there's no reason that he's just causing trouble for the sake of causing trouble. Mm. He could have just left him there, and Walt wasn't doing anything weird or odd. He was, yeah, you know, it was just what he was doing. So, you know, because they already knew that he was going about Hank and the tracker and all that sort of stuff. So it wasn't like he was doing anything that he needed to hide particularly. So, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a very Walt thing to do, but yes, it's an interesting kind of opening thing with Hank and Walt there.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, there you go. Skylar tells Walt that the car wash is doing so well that he may be able to quit cooking meth. Ted tells Skylar he is being audited. I almost said auditioned. No, you don't audition for tax fraud. unless it's a role in something. Audited for tax fraud, as his former bookkeeper. Since she was aware of the fraud, Skylar could also be implicated. She attends Ted's audit and pretends to be underqualified and completely ignorant of the accounting practices. Believing the fraud was not intentional, the investigator agrees not to seek prison time, but still orders Ted to pay back taxes and total fines across $600,000. Skylar ventures into the crawl space underneath the White House, I suppose. Where she has been storing Walt's cash. Just a couple of very interesting little bits and pieces. I did not remember at all that... I'll say it this way. I remember what happens to Ted. I remember where he ends up, like how his story ends. I did not remember... because it hasn't been in the episodes for a bit, actually, at least not been in this season. I think he was in last season, wasn't he, for a little bit of time.
But
I didn't remember like how he came back in or anything like that, but I do distinctly remember kind of where he ends up, so that was interesting to see. I also didn't kind of specifically remember this storyline. I remember like the cooking the books before. I remember we talked about that last season in some episodes, but I didn't remember it sort of coming back in this way. And this has got to be just, again, hugely inconvenient for Skylar, really just annoying for her in terms of they're trying to sort this new thing out. They just got this car wash place. Things are seemingly better and a bit more under control, and then Ted just kind of swoops in with this. Again, understandable why he's told her and all that sort of thing, and she was obviously, you know, involved in it and everything, but it's just like, damn, just as they kind of thought that like some of this had gone away and she'd sort of settled with this, and now she kind of has not two cash problems in a way, but this first one of sort of, okay, we got so much money, where do we store it, all those kind of things. She's starting to get that like under control, and then the crawl space thing and everything like that, and then Ted just pops up with this other like money problem, I suppose. So yeah, interesting, very interesting stuff. I don't remember Walt particularly telling her much about the whole quitting cooking meth thing. So that was interesting that that kind of came up as well. I thought the actual scene in the office was quite, like, fun and funny in a way. She's just, like, pretending that she didn't really sort of know, I guess, what was going on. Like, oh, we used this thing. And the guy was like, you used that? So I thought that was done pretty well as well. But yeah, it looks like Ted was going to be in at least one more episode, because this isn't the last that we see of him. So, plus this is going to probably go on for a little bit. I can't remember if she does or does not actually give him the cash, but my feeling, and it's weird to make predictions for a show that I've already seen, I wonder if it is the case of, okay, because they do have the sort of overflow money problem, that it's like, this might be a decent way to almost get rid of some of it, but then some of it's dirty cash, isn't it? I think. Mm-hmm. But hence the whole money laundering car wash thing. So I wonder how that would go. Anyway, what did you remember about this, and what did you think of the scenes?
I did remember a little bit about it sort of coming back around, and I hadn't remembered it beforehand, but I did once the scene started. I was like, oh yeah, I do remember this scene when Skylar comes in and she's sort of all dolled up and you know, he's trying to sort of make it seem like Ted basically hired her because, you know, she was pretty and, you know, they were having an affair. So I did think that was all, I've sort of remembered that. Mm. But I can't remember the whole outcome of it and exactly what happens to Ted later on. I sort of half remember it. So him coming back in, I can't remember whether they actually give him money. I think she probably does give him money and that upsets Walt. I suspect that's where we're going with this, but I can't remember if that is the case. But yeah, I mean, Anna Gunn is great in this episode, you know, playing that sort of version of Skylar. Very, very clever to come up with that and basically play the sort of blonde bimbo of kind of, you know, oh, I didn't understand and I don't really have any training and, you know, I don't have a background in it. I thought that was a wonderful. So, and I can see why she's so concerned, because of course, if she sort of says, you know, it gives them the authority to not only tap your phone, to tap our phones as well, because I'm named on those documents.
And that's the last
thing she wants, because that is a huge problem. And also if they then go looking into the car wash, because she owns that business as well, it would probably give them license to go looking at that and where she got the money for that, which then opens them up to them discovering what's going on there. So really she just needs it to go away, and then when Ted says he doesn't have the money, that's a huge issue. So yeah, I can see her kind of going, well, I'll just give him the bunch of the money. I mean, that is a problem because, you know, it hasn't been laundered necessarily, but that is one way of getting out of it. But, you know, she goes from starting off going, you know, we're doing great, the car wash is doing well, you might be able to quit the job, and well, seems amenable to that, although I mean, you know, you've got no show if you quit it. So she's sort of all happy and that's all going fine, and then Ted drops this bombshell out of nowhere. So yeah, I can't remember exactly how this plays out, but it's an interesting kind of curveball that's sort of thrown in there for them.
Mm. It is an interesting kind of setup in a way of, they do almost need to like get rid of some, or like shave some off the top, if you know what I mean. Because there is the overflow of cash, and then because this thing's come up which could implicate, you know, everything and ruin everything, that you do have the money to do that. I don't know if there's like a detail that comes up in terms of it being dirty money, and if Ted gets, I can't remember any of that, but because it's not clean money, is it? So yeah, be very interesting.
There is also the fact that it sort of wouldn't necessarily be entirely clean money anyway, because it would be money that Ted had stolen, so, you know, right, from the firm. because he'd been cooking the books. So that might not be as much of a problem. The bigger issue is the fact that, you know, you're giving over $500,000 to, or dollars, to Ted. And Walt's not going to like that. So, yeah, and there's that, I think, is probably the bigger problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's his money. And if he's suddenly going to have to give it, you know, to Ted to sort out a problem which Ted created, it's absolutely nothing to do with him. It's not really anything to do with Skylar, because he was cooking the books before Skylar. Actually, Skylar was the one that found that he was cooking the books, wasn't he? Wasn't she? So it's not her problem. It's not Walt's problem. It's Ted's problem. But Walt may end up having to pay a bunch of money for it. And even though he's perfectly capable of, you know, they've got too much money and he's perfectly capable of making more, that's going to piss him off. So
yeah, the male ego part of the show. So
yeah, because, you know, all of his ego. So yeah, I'm interested to see how that plans out.
It will be very interesting. What was I going to say? Yeah, it's just... it was also just, I guess it was from his panicked state, but him going like, can you sort of uncook the books? And it's like, no, mate, that's, you can't, no. Even though you can't really do that. You can't edit something that's been printed like that before. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, I guess we'll all see where this goes. Switching over to Gus in Terminator style, a cartel sniper opens fire on Gus's distribution center, killing one of Gus's employees, which ends when Gus walks outside alone and stands in the line of fire. Mike later explains to Jesse that the cartel needs to keep Gus alive for his distribution network. They dissolve the dead employees, which is almost just like another day, at this point in acid. And Mike threatens to kill Walt if he ever calls the police on Mike's people again. He says about, you know, needing two barrels if you do that again. I wonder what Gus would make of that. Awesome scene. I didn't remember this coming up until he started walking. When he started walking, I was like, oh yeah, I think I remember him doing this and walking out into the line of fire. But yeah, just like shooting by his feet and then just like the big pose, right, of sort of does he mouth like do it or something, I think as well, and then like there's a sniper right on his head, but of course they can't take him out. But I'm starting to, like, within all this, feel more sorry for Jesse again, because you can clearly tell there's Gail, like, flashbacks of such, like when this guy just gets sniped out of nowhere, and then again, it's another headshot in front of him. It's more blood from someone's head. It's all probably, like, you know, related to that and coming back to him. Which, yeah, Mike's just sort of, okay, you need to get out of the way next time. It was very interesting. There's an interesting kind of three-part dynamic here, which is Jesse being shocked. And again, Jesse's got some experience in this industry, but not sort of tons of it. And we do have to remember I don't know how old Jesse's supposed to be, but he's not, like, that old, is he? He's still, like, kind of on the young side.
Early 20s, probably.
You think early 20s?
Yeah, I would have said.
Okay.
I mean, because he's a couple of years out of school, isn't he? So.
Oh, yeah.
He's got to be, yeah, so he must be 18. He must be over 18, so he's got to be early 20s.
Wow. Yeah. But yeah, still, like, very young with all the experience with that, and then, like, as I've mentioned before, it's interesting how Mike's experience comes across in these types of scenes, and he does the whole, like, pull him to the side, take cover. It was interesting, Mike, like, pointing his little gun out. I was like, okay, I don't think you're gonna quite hit him with that, but anyway. And then you just got Gus, like, the kingpin, just storming outside. So you've got, like, Mike telling him to come back in. Mike's trying to, like, control the situation and be experienced. Jesse's just, like, stunned and shocked. And then Gus is just kind of turning into the Terminator. It was just... it was really, really great. So, yeah. There you go. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about the Walt thing in a minute. What do you think of Terminator Gus?
It's a fabulous scene. And I'd completely forgotten about this scene. So that was a nice kind of... surprise going into this, I'd completely forgotten Gus had done this. So, yeah, it's a real kind of, you know, badass move from Gus, this. Just sort of knowing that they're not going to shoot him and they can't shoot him, and there's bullets kind of flying past and he's actually kind of moving his head slightly and they're all kind of shooting around him, and, you know, the sniper's shooting around him but not actually to hit him. So, yeah, it's such a good scene. And he does, I think, mouth, you know, do it. And the guy knows he can't. So, yeah. It's a great way of kind of pulling the focus, and the reaction of Jesse, of just like a deer caught in a headlights, you know, and then Mike diving on him to pull him to the side. And yeah, it's just a great, great scene, that.
Certainly. Yeah, definitely. But yeah, Terminator Gus is just being awesome there. Yeah. Interesting with the, there's a few people starting, I guess, to turn on Walt and get a bit more annoyed with them, and Mike's kind of outburst of, like, you do that again and you'll be one of the bodies in the thing. That plus what's going on with Jesse and how that feeds into the end of the episode. But yeah, again, some of the Walt / Heisenberg cracks starting to show, I suppose, because he's certainly not as, I guess, in charge as he'd want to be. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But interesting stuff. I'm not sure, like, where that thread leads to, I guess.
There is a great line from Walt there. It's like, so what? Is this going to be a regular thing now? Meth cooking corpse disposal. She's just a wonderful, wonderful line. And yeah, Mike's always been quite grumpy, but the fact that he's like just really annoyed at Walt at that point, after, you know, because he doesn't know what they've just done and what they've just been through, and he's just assuming that it's Gus doing something, like, you know, somebody's upset him and he's just killed somebody for no apparent reason, when, you know, it's one of Mike's guys that's being shot by an enemy. And, you know, so you can understand where Mike's coming from with that. And, you know, but it shows how sort of in the dark Walt is, even compared to Jesse at this point. So, yeah, I think that's really kind of an interesting little scene, that.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Moving on from that, at Gus's house, Gus tells Jesse that he has given into the cartel's demands to split territory, and that Jesse will be sent to Mexico to teach them how to cook the blue meth. Jesse has an opportunity to poison the stew that Gus made, but decides not to risk it. So this does feed into the Walt thing. Again, Giancarlo being great, Aaron Paul being great as well, and the whole, like, gentle house approach was really, really cool. And, like, the difference in sort of, not necessarily the difference in dialogue, but the difference in delivery. And while Jesse's being, he's not, you know, slamming stuff or swearing or shouting or anything like that, but, like, the tone is raised there, and the kind of, oh, you expect me to do this, do you want me to do this and do that, and Gus just still having the gentle kind of approach that I thought was interesting. But again, this whole, the thing with the rice, and again, it's just kind of like, again, if he takes that pack, the cigarette out, and he like drops it, or he doesn't put it in correctly, or because the only thing he really could have done is put it in Gus's wine, because he can't put it in the stew and then, what, excuse himself to go to the toilet, and then, because then he can't eat it, can he? Because
yeah, because it's poisoned.
Yeah, so just and yeah, just not an easy thing to do. I mean, if Gus was more of like a, like Tuco, you could probably do this with, because Tuco would be like stomping around the room, probably going to a different room. He's like high and distracted and all this sort of stuff. Whereas with the way that Gus is and how he like pays attention to details and things like that, just the whole method of like trying to take it out, make sure it goes in properly and not drop anything, not sort of draw any attention to herself, because unless Jesse takes like a spoon and offers to stir the stew for some reason, although I don't know if Gus would. But then again, you can't put it in the stew unless you don't eat some of it. Otherwise, we end up with Gus Sanchez. He did. So, but this New Mexico thing, I do remember where that goes, I think. So I'm not going to talk like too much about that. But again, the cracks in the sort of Jesse relationship there, and or partnership, I suppose, and what Gus is trying to do. Is certainly a very, very interesting angle to see. What do you think?
Yeah, there's also another thing going on here. I mean, remember, Jesse's just seen Gus basically face off against a sniper, you know, to protect his people. And they have this conversation of, like, you know, Jesse's still concerned about Walt when he gets invited to the house. He's like, wait, so are you trying to get me to take over the mess business? Is that what you're asking me, so you can kill Walt? And he's sort of going, because, you know, I'm not going to do that. And Gus is then, no, I need you to go to Mexico to prevent an all-out war with the cartel. So again, Gus is sort of doing it to keep the business alive and keep his people safe. So I think there's a part of that as well, which is like, well, he's the guy that's kind of protecting us at the moment, and I kind of don't want to kill him, you know, because if we kill him and the cartel turns up, God knows what will happen. I mean, I think all of that stuff is also going through Jesse's head. So it's not just a lack of opportunity. It is also, well, killing him, apart from it being incredibly difficult, he's not coming across as the monster that Walt is making him out to be.
It's true.
I mean, they've seen him kill somebody in front of them, you know, with the box cutter, but at this exact point, he's getting closer to Jesse, and there's a slightly different dynamic going on there, and Jesse isn't as sort of willing, I think, to risk not only getting caught for killing Gus, but also the aftermath of that. I think there's all that going on as well. So yeah, I mean, I entirely get why Jesse doesn't want to do it. I mean, it's ridiculous of Walt to kind of put Jesse in that position and expect him just to go kill somebody, you know, because, like you say, even if you have put it in the stew, you then can't eat the stew, because it's not like it's going to happen immediately either, so you'd have to put it in the wine, and that's far trickier. And so there's, I mean, just apart from the basic logistics of it, I don't think Jesse's heart is in it at all either, understandably, you know, for obvious reasons. So yeah
certainly. But again, just I know we talk about it all the time, just the gentle nature of Gus's character, and the particular kind of, because one, like, it's a silly idea, not a serious one or whatever, but like, you did like a Gus Fring cooking show, and you had like all the delicate like chopping. Although in this scene, there's a bit more like, there's a little bit more aggression in the chopping there. I noticed it's sort of, oh, Jesse's here, and kind of, I'll deal with the situation, but it's not something he's like, kind of he'd want to do something else right now, I guess. So, but very good stuff. On to our last scene, the big, conclusion to the episode, and where this all kind of rounds off, I suppose. Jesse tells Walt he is supposed to teach the cartel how to produce meth, and asks for a tutorial so he can explain the chemistry, but does not reveal the meeting with Gus. That is the sticking point here. Walt reveals that he put a GPS tracker on Jesse's car, so he knew that Jesse was at Gus's house. Walt confronts Jesse for failing to kill Gus, because apparently to Walt that's just an easy thing to do. But Jesse throws the GPS tracker at Walt's head. Walt and Jesse engage in a brutal fight. Well, it says brutal here. I wouldn't describe it as that. Wreck the living room before Jesse gains the upper hand and tells Walt to leave his house, never to return. I thought this scene was fantastic. It's just like, you've got multiple parts of it, right? You've got the interesting build-up and the sort of Jesse bringing this up, but the big sticking point to Walt is like, oh, so you didn't see Gus, you didn't meet Gus, you didn't talk to Gus, and Jesse just not wanting to acknowledge that. And for the maybe the first full time, you can really start to see some big cracks in this, because it's sort of, okay, why are you not telling me that you were at Gus's house kind of thing, and I thought this was part of our, like, partnership plan. Even though when, again, I know I keep going back to this, but when Walt first brings this up about, like, oh, just slip this in and do this, and both us as the audience and seemingly Jesse as well was kind of, was that, like, the best thing to do? Is that the easiest thing to do? And the way Walt also, like, kind of slams it into his chest or whatever and sort of, like, oh, just like, get it done and that kind of thing. I think at that point it does go past also the idea of, like, okay, just do this job. There's more to it there, but there's more kind of frustration for Walt there, although there's some, I guess, some bits of Heisenberg in here as well. But, yeah, it's almost, like, sort of by the end of this scene, it's almost become a point of, okay, Gus is maybe less of a specific problem for Jesse and more just because this is such a sticking point for you, Walt, and you can't do this because you don't have access to Gus and all those other sorts of things, that it's more starting to be annoying for him. And then that's obviously where things kind of fall apart. So it's really, really great dialogue and writing and obviously acting and things like that. The fight itself, I couldn't remember where it went, and then when they just started getting into a scuffle, I'll be honest, I just started laughing. It was just,
yes,
it was really great. I think they've had a little scuffle like this before. Was it in the, I think it was in the RV or something, Jesse said,
yes,
something wrong in, like, season one or season two, and that was a sort of pretty funny one as well, because you can tell this isn't a sort of, like, they're not actually trying to, you know, kill each other, and this is not a serious kind of thing, but it's sort of, this is the next logical thing they both go to, which is, okay, we can't agree on what's going on and the whole Mexico thing and the tracker on Gus and the issue of Gus and the ricin, and it just kind of built up to two men fighting, I suppose. Yeah, that poor apartment, though, it looked really kind of, like, nice and everything, and then just, I liked the little, who is it? I think it's when Jesse's pushing Walt against the wall, and you can see the Rage cover on the Xbox 360. A few of those get kind of knocked off, so that was great as well. And of course, that's what leads into the blood scene in the cold open. So nice way to round off the episode. I really thought in this one they did a great. I mean, they do it in a lot of the other ones, but kind of this whole build up of, like, Walt getting knocked down a peg by Mike and, like, Tyrus, and the frustration with Hank, the frustration with Gus, and then Jesse's side of it, and then how both those things just kind of culminate in the scene, I thought was done really, really well. So, and I also can't remember necessarily where the two of them go after this, as in terms of the partnership and all that sort of thing. So, anyway, what do you think of this last scene?
I love this scene. It's because the fight itself, I mean, yeah, it does. A lot of the write-ups of it do say, oh, brutal fight scene. It's not really. I mean, you know, because it's very much Walt doing this. You know, it isn't Heisenberg in here. If that had been Heisenberg, it would have been a very different thing. It's clearly a panicky Walt and an annoyed Walt that's annoyed at Jesse for the fact that, you know, he Walt's asked for this completely unreasonable thing of Jesse just to go and kill our, you know, overlord, drug lord, boss. And I mean, it's a ridiculous thing to ask him to do in the first place, and then gets upset about it. And they have that thing about, you know, Jesse says, everything that I've done for you, you put a bug on my car. And Walt's like, everything you've done for me, what you've done for me. And he's sort of like, and it's true. I mean, Jesse has done so much for Walt. I mean, Walt has done stuff for Jesse as well, but, like, it's so ridiculous. And then, you know, he throws the thing and then Walt attacks him. And yeah, that fight sequence is very much sort of Walt and Jesse fighting. And it is kind of funny. So yeah, it's just really, really well done between the pair of them. And I don't remember where it ends up either. So that's going to be an interesting thing to find out for the next episode, I think. And yeah, I think I remember what happens to Jesse to a certain extent, but yeah, I don't remember how Walt copes. So yes, we'll see.
Same. Same. Yeah, we'll just I'll put it to that. But yeah, just it's also really great with, I mean, Breaking Bad's obviously brilliant at doing a lot of things, but the fact that you have a show where so much drama does happen, obviously it's a drama television series, but then you do have like there's something about Walt and the way when he does get into certain scraps, because you can call them scraps more than fights, I suppose, and like it's even little things such as when Jesse throws the GPS tracker and it hits him and Walt gives this little look, and yeah. There's like this interesting comedy element to it where it's sort of, you guys have just been arguing about like GPS trackers and kingpins and drug deals and killing people and all this like really dramatic serious stuff, and then you flip into this comedic scrap scene. But it doesn't feel like some sort of weird flip-flop or tonal shift, or it actually feels really quite natural. I think if it had been any other two characters fighting, it wouldn't have felt that way, but just the build-up within it and all that sort of thing. But I think Walt's had that like injury, not Tom and Jerry level, this isn't sort of that kind of thing, but the injury comedic thing of when he's gotten into certain scraps, and it's funny, even, you know, deepish into season 4 that's kind of still there. So how long that hangs around for, I can't remember, but
no,
there we go. All right, that's it for the episode. Let's get in some feedback. Of course, if you'd like to write into the show, let us know what you're thinking of the episodes. Have you seen Better Call Saul? Have you seen either show more than once? Have you not started Better Call Saul? Let us know about all those different things. Are you going to watch Pluribus as well? We both haven't seen the show, but you should obviously definitely watch it. Go and get Apple TV. I saw that they redid their little intro and stuff as well. So anyway, yeah, let us know your thoughts on the episodes. You can write predictions in if you want. I mean, we're kind of slipping into doing some of our own predictions here. So anyway, let us know all of your thoughts, feelings, questions, comments, whatever. Matthew@entertainmenttalk.org. Social media is either eTalk UK or Entertainment Talk. We're on pretty much everything, and there's information in your show notes. Warren says, hey, I'm back. Welcome back. Says it's been a while. Who are the 5 people both in and out of Breaking Bad you'd like to interview? And then ask the second question, who would you like to see team up with Vince? Assume you mean obviously Vince Gilligan, the showrunner. 5 people on and off. I mean, 5 people from the show is pretty easy to pick, because you'd go, you know, Bryan Cranston, probably Vince himself, definitely Giancarlo, see that as well. Mm-hmm. Probably Anna Gunn, Dean Norris. I'm not sure if I've named more than 4, but yeah, most of those kind of big ones off the top. If I was to maybe pick a smaller name from the show, so like one of the less kind of, oh yeah, talk to Brian, talk to Vince, all this kind of stuff. I don't know, something like maybe, I mean, we talked to John Piano, who was like the production designer on Last of Us. Somebody in a bit of a different field of the show like that. Somebody who sort of who designed some of the sets or that kind of thing. So I'll go with some of those 4 people, and then whoever would have like worked on some of the sets as the 5th person. 5 outside of that, Neil Druckmann's at the very top of my list. I feel like I could talk to that guy for probably quite a few hours about a lot of things. Who else would be in there? Someone like a Kiefer Sutherland would be great. Obviously a lot of questions about 24 and things like that. Probably somebody like a Tom Hanks, obviously a Toy Story connections there. I'd pick somebody from Crash Bandicoot, but at the moment I don't know who that would be, because it's a bit like inactive and no one's sort of really working on things for it. So that was 3, I think. If I was to pick another showrunner or something, I don't know about Kojima, because I didn't enjoy like Death Stranding 2 as much as I thought I was going to. He'd be an interesting person to pick the brain of, but I'd maybe talk about his upcoming game and stuff like that. So you'd put Kojima on the list. Somebody a bit different, maybe somebody like a Jeff Keighley runs the Game Awards. He's obviously probably got a lot of industry connections, and he's obviously talked to a number of developers and things like that. So I think that was five. So I'll go with those as my five outside. There's other obvious people like, you know, Laura Bailey, Ashley Johnson, Troy Baker, all those sorts of obvious big names. Lots of different actors and stuff. So how about yourself?
Well, I mean, of course, in terms of people not on the show, I've interviewed a whole ton of people outside of the show already. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, there is that. I've actually interviewed, I think I interviewed the makeup designer for Breaking Bad, who was Tara Day. Back in 2018, I think I interviewed her. So I have interviewed somebody involved in the show. I mean, obviously, the people that you do would like to actually have a proper chat with are, you know, people like Vince Gilligan. You know, the showrunners are always good. The actors are always, you know, fine to talk to. You know, Bryan Cranston, Giancarlo, Aaron Paul, Dean Norris, you know, all those guys would be great to sit down and chat with. You generally, when you're doing interviews with actors, you don't get much time with them, unfortunately. Behind the scenes people, they're usually much happier to sit down and do a long form kind of chat. So yeah, people involved in the production in some way, either the production designers or the cinematographers, or, you know, I mean, cinematographer for one of the cinematographers for Breaking Bad would be quite an interesting one to do, given it's got a very stylistic look to it. So yeah, in terms of that, in terms of people outside of the Breaking Bad, I mean, you know, go and check out our Behind the Scenes podcast, I would say, because there's I've already done a ton of people from, you know, actors like I did James Marsters this year from Buffy. I've done people from Star Trek. The stunt people are always quite interesting because they have some great stories usually, so they're quite good. I've done a lot of VFX people, but a ton of composers. Generally, the production designers I find quite interesting to talk to. Directors and showrunners are always quite interesting. You know, I did the showrunner for Twisted Metal. He was fantastic. That's there's a video interview of that up on the YouTube channel. So yeah, but the production designers, particularly cinematographers, those sort of people can be quite interesting ones to have conversations with, and they're usually very happy to chat for a while about that stuff.
But is there any like names at the top of your list that you'd love to do like a proper interview with, I suppose, like any that you haven't done yet? I suppose
there is a composer that I would like to talk to, who is very difficult to get time with because he's so ridiculously busy, and that's Bear McCreadie, who has done he is the composer on sort of Outlander. He did God of War on the video games front, Da Vinci's Demons, Percy Jackson. He's done a whole bunch of different shows. Battlestar Galactica was his as well. Halo, The Witcher, Foundation. Nice. Some of the production design people from Foundation, I think, would be quite nice. Did Snowpiercer as well. So, I mean, yeah, just a ridiculous amount of shows that Bear does. And he'd be great to chat with. He's the one composer that I haven't actually managed to get hold of. So he would be really interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of other people, you know, they come up every so often, and if I find them interesting, I will talk to them. So, you know.
See, with Neil, it would be like, okay, I wouldn't just dump loads of Last of Us questions on him. I'd ask him about, like, you know, Naughty Dog, and about obviously Intergalactic, which is coming up, and like his roles in some things, you know, Uncharted and Jack and Daxter and Crash and that. So yeah, he'd be pretty great to talk to. So who would you like to team up with, Vince? Neil Druckmann, because I think you'd have an interesting combination there of a really interesting, like, human writer person. That, like, that, to me, that's what I think Neil Druckmann does the best stuff with. And then just all of, like, Vince's great storyline kind of ideas mixed in with that. Because I used to kind of do it as, like, oh, yeah, you'd get, like, a quote-unquote more normal showrunner and then throw, like, Kojima in there. But if you had, like... Because I would suspect if you put, let's say, Vince and Neil on the same, like, writing team and they wrote something together, you'd have some similar grounded ideas. If you then throw Kojima in there and he's got, like, all kinds of crazy Metal Gear and Death Stranding stuff, that would... No, I wouldn't say it would throw it off, but it would make that thing something very different, I think, as well. So, but yeah, plus I think, you know, Vince and Neil are maybe two of some of the best creatives in the industry. I mean, Vince's show ran the best show I've seen, and Neil has directed and written the best game I've played. So why not put them together? I wonder if they've ever met or had a, like, a conversation, because they both technically work for Sony.
yeah, true.
So, although in different fields, so I don't know. Anyway, who would you like to see Vince team up with in the future?
I mean, if you're going to take Neil Druckmann, I mean, Craig Mazin's the other one.
Yeah, again, you've got that human kind of grounded level writing, I suppose, like the Chernobyl stuff. So
there's that in terms of showrunners. In terms of front of camera, I'm not sure. It's very difficult because I think he's so good at, you know, creating these characters. And I mean, you have to remember at the time when this came out, when they cast Bryan Cranston, everybody went, the guy from Malcolm in the Middle?
Yeah.
Really? So, you know, I think it's, yeah, you know, you could do something like that for somebody like Nick Offerman, I think, who, I mean, he's already proved on Last of Us he can do kind of really serious stuff, but for him to have, I think he's that sort of character that I think you could write an interesting show around and give him, you know, he has that level of seriousness and comedy that you could do, you know. I think that would be an interesting one. Jeffrey Wright as well is the other person that I think, you know. I think that's the thing. The writing's so good on something like Breaking Bad, you can pretty much make any actor that's worth their salt look good. So,
yeah. Just another name to throw out would be Hallie Gross, who co-wrote and co-directed, I believe. Yeah, Last of Us 2. And was also involved in the... I just keep throwing Last of Us names out there.
Well, yes. No, I mean, you want to mash those two things together, I understand.
Someone like Hallie alongside Vince would be... I mean, you can't really go wrong with, like, any of those combinations. So,
there
you go. This switches around a bit. Abed says, absolutely loved Matt's EastEnders comparison thing and thought it was funny. Matt, when did you last watch the show? It was a couple of years after... I don't remember why I stopped. It's just, you know, when you just drift away from a show or something for just no reason, and then a few years goes by and you're like, oh yeah, I'm not watching that thing anymore. It was... I remember the era of, like, when Bradley was around, and then he, like, fell off the roof. It's not a spoiler because that happened, like, 20 years ago. when he fell off the roof at Christmas. And then I think I watched it for, like, another year or two after that. I catch bits of, like, news and stuff about the show. And because news of, like, soaps is treated weird because, like, spoilers are treated like news. Like, oh, yeah, this character's going to die, or this character's going to leave, this actor's left. So you kind of already know sometimes. It was in and around there. I've been watching up to now Hollyoaks for 15 years, and I haven't watched any EastEnders since then. And it's not like I replaced that with that. It's just that just kind of is just what happened, I suppose. So I guess it might have been nearly 20 years ago. Yeah, if that was 15 years. So, but those are some of the more recent things I remember when I watched it. So, a rough ballpark of that. How about you? You said, like, quite a long time since you'd seen any EastEnders?
Since I've seen EastEnders, it's probably, I mean, I'd probably Den and Angie was probably about the last time I watched it, which is, I mean, I was, what, God, at least 30 years ago, I would have thought. So,
yeah,
I mean, I haven't seen it in years. So, I mean, I'm glad it's there and I'm glad it's still going. And, you know, soaps are important things.
Oh,
but,
yeah, definitely.
You know, they're great training grounds. I mean, look at the amount of people that have popped out the top of Hollyoaks and ended up getting Hollywood movies and stuff. But, yeah. I mean, those sort of soaps are great training grounds for actors. So it's important that we have them, but not really my thing. And I haven't got the time or energy to spend watching them. So
yeah, certainly. All right, there we go with that. Josh's last here says, "Wow, didn't expect Jesse and Walt to turn on each other, but should have seen the seeds be planted." Says that poor apartment. Yeah, Jesse's gonna have to. He's not gonna have to have as big a cleanup job as when they had the drug fueled thing. I don't know if you call that a rave, but a few things got smashed, and you know, a few game cases fell. It was funny because I was kind of watching that, and like, obviously knew that Walt and Jesse weren't gonna kill each other in the scene because that would have made things take a big turn. I was like, and as I started laughing a bit more, because like, oh, okay, they're fighting, and then I was just like, you know, absorbing it, and then slowly started laughing a bit more when I saw how, again, not silly it was, but it's supposed to be portrayed in a certain way. And then as they're like pushing each other around, punching each other, I was like, I sort of want the two of you to stop it so that you just don't mess this apartment up too much, because there's, you know, it's although Jesse's got loads of money, there's still expensive stuff there to be. You know, big speakers and TV and things, and it's just inconvenient to replace them all. So that was kind of where my thought was at, I suppose. Because I wasn't, you know, concerned for their safety because I knew that they would both be fine. But yeah, so I don't know, it's interesting because, like, although there's, like, again, the male ego thing, particularly obviously on Walt's side, that's one of, like, the focal points of the show, or vocal points of the show, I suppose. And how he gets, like, you know, irritated by stuff and talks about control and ego and things like that. How, of course, in some of the recent episodes with the Gus stuff and the ricin, and that's where some of those seeds have been planted. But there is, even in some of the earlier episodes, there is still a little bit of, I don't know if you'd call it tension, but kind of, I suppose you've got maybe like some early stuff when, like, you know, when they need to dissolve, I think it was Crazy Eight's body, the one he was tied up by the lock in the basement, and it's like, right, we need to dissolve him. And then little early things like Jesse getting the wrong bucket, and then that like coming through the ceiling, and it's like the bits of fallout from that, because they've never, although they've had a bit of a laugh and a few things like that, there is still a couple of parts where a sort of they'd clashed a bit. I mean, obviously, this has got to a more heated state because of all the seeds that have been planted. But it wasn't sort of clean from the beginning, I suppose. I mean, there was a few, you know, when they'd do something well in the RV, I think there was like a high five at one point, and there was bits like that. But they'd still more than have the capacity to get annoyed at each other, I think, as well. Mm-hmm. And there's things like that. I remember when, what was it, the battery for the RV got drained, and Walt was like really annoyed by that. So some interesting bits and pieces there. What do you think of all that stuff?
What was the original question again? You went off on a tangent.
I did. Yeah. Says I'll read the email again. It says, "Well, didn't expect Jesse and Walt to turn on each other, but should have seen the seeds be planted. That poor apartment, too."
Oh, right. Yeah. No. I mean, well, yeah. The apartment. I'm sort of. I mean, I mean, fine, but, you know, it's a shame having just seemed to have done it up a little bit and, yeah, suddenly it's all getting wrecked again. But, yeah, I mean, that's the relationship between these two. I mean, they are like sort of father-son, a rather dysfunctional family. Mm. So, you know, I'm sure this isn't the last time we see them at each other's throats. I don't think so, you know.
Don't think so.
We'll see where we go from here.
Indeed. Cool, that's the end of the episode. Thank you very much for listening. If you'd, of course, like to find all the other stuff that we do on entertainmenttalk.org, you can go, of course, over there for TV, games, films, main night podcasts, support what we do. There's things like Unitedcast, Gaming Talk. There'll be other stuff coming up soon. And yeah, we're kind of, slowly, quietly, don't know which word to use, hurtling towards the end of the year. So there's going to be, I guess, end of the year stuff popping up. I've got some season reviews to do for things and a couple of other podcasts. So look out for all those. Be it entertainmenttalk.org, podcast platforms, Entertainment Talk for TV, games, films, Man United podcast. If you like what you've heard and you want to support more of it, of course, you can go over to places I've just mentioned and check out more of our content. There's a whole bunch of it. Word of mouth social media always helps us out. And if someone mentions a thing we podcasted on, please tell them about said podcast. But also, as I said on Gaming Talk, if you didn't like what you heard today, which I guess is fine in a certain way, tell us why. Tell us what we should do, I guess, more of, less of, and all that kind of stuff. So let us know about those. Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers, VR free podcast review options. Look for those as well if you'd like to. TV and film news over on Geek Town Radio Tuesdays and geektown.co.uk. David, that is yours. What's going on over there?
We just did the latest episode of Geek Town Radio, which is episode 478, and we talked about Tron Ares and Down Cemetery Road, the new Robin Hood series, which is coming to MGM Plus, and Chad Powers as well, plus a bunch of other stuff. So that episode is out. You can hear what we think about that. There's news going up on the website as well. There's all our coverage from MCM Comic Con, so there was interviews and stuff from that, and some panels for The Boys and things like that. So that's all up on there. There are air dates and all that sort of stuff is around. And yeah, not mentioned this anyway yet, but we have got a new podcast incoming at some point. I'm not entirely sure when I'm going to release it yet, but there is a new podcast incoming as well, which I'm working on right now, so which is a little different. So keep an eye out for that. But that's all over on geektown.co.uk.
Cool, little tease announcement there. Yeah, that's for on Geektown's stuff, not to do with the Entertainment Talk. So yeah, look out for that project at some point on Geektown. So look out for that. And yeah, you can go to geektown.co.uk through the week for the TV and film news posts. But also remember to check out Geektown Radio on Tuesdays as well. And of course, yeah, we're on YouTube, Entertainment Talk Plays, for all of our video game streams, clips and stuff like that. I've just received Hell Is Us. I might stream a bit of that at some point. So if you go to YouTube, look for Entertainment Talk Plays. And unfortunately, you have to press a few buttons, which is subscribing and ringing the bell. I don't make up those rules, but those are the buttons that you have to press to get notified, although it doesn't always work, so there you go. Anyway, check out those on that for all those things, and just subscribe to all different things we've mentioned. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next time for, will it be episode 10 next time already?
Yes, it will.
We're heading towards, like you said, heading towards the end of the season, and we'll see how things go. Anyway, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye. Cool.